Welcome to Sunday World Engage, a platform where we engage people of interest in the South African public life. And today we have the MEC of Health in Gauteng, as well as the Deputy Coordinator of the ANC Provincial Task Team. ANC Things and Changing. Umama Unomantu Ngomora Lihoku, Mama. All right. I'm busy, Mama, by the way.
Mama Lepond.
Oh, Mama Lepond. Mama, I'm glad I see courage slowly. Who is Nomantu to those that don't know? Where were you born? Where did you go to school and all that?
Nomantu Nkomo was born and bred in Eastern Cape in an area called Engobo.
Chris and Kapal. Okay, but
Engobo. And I studied there. There's a small village there called Mbekeni. In fact, it's called Mbekeni, Kukwambekeni, because of the family that, that is called Yamadlomo.
Okay.
You know, the Dlomo clan.
Yeah.
So part of that area, Yabo, that's why Kukwambekeni.
Okay.
So it's the surname of that clan, Yamadlomo. So the party as a kaya if Nkomo. So there were those few major families like Nkomo, Mbekeni. So the area you took to Mbekeni. It's nice. It's not, it's a small area.
Mm-hmm.
On your way to Iduka, where Thabo Mbeki was born, we're just 20 kilometers away from Thabo Mbeki's village, and we're 70 km away from Amtata. And we're around 90 kilometers to Queenstown. Yokofimvaba, where Chris Annie was born, Yonkelo area.
Hey, you're born among legends.
And then Gala is just 10 kilometers away from Gala, where Gwede was born. And the MEC for the minister again for finance from Gala there. So it's a beautiful place. It's in a mountainous area. Although Kumpekeni Pine were more of a flatter area where my sister's son, the premier, Mabuyane, was born again. So Mabuyane ndi ngu-anti wakhe, mtshana wami. Yeah, so sihlangene ke lapho ke ekhaya kunakwenziwa nto Mabuyane ngekho, and then again apho uXhasa. The Xhasa family.
Yes, there was
a minister, Xhasa, and the wife.
MEC,
the wife now is an ambassador. That's where we come from.
Okay.
All of us. It's a beautiful place. You'll love it when you go there.
No,
it's quite exciting. There are two worlds there. It's us that have been able to go to school and those that were unable to go to school. But that generation is fading away now because of the developments that are happening in the area. My mother couldn't read and write, and my father couldn't read and write. So I'm coming from that type of a family. But my father had a lot of cattle, a lot of sheep. So my family, when you want meat, it was easier to get meat. Even now, even when my father died and my mother, we just buried her last year, October, we still have all those things that they had before, because now even us as the generation were able to assist and buy cows. So if I get an increment at work, you must know one of the amount it goes to cows.
You owe me a cow, by the way.
Yes, that's why I'm saying a goat. I have goats. So to say to me, you need a goat, it's something that I can give it to you easily. And so, but I grew up from that family. Then I studied there until matric. I studied my matric. There's an area not far from town called Nyanga High School where Mondli Kungubele studied, and where Mondli Kungubele again managed to teach at an early age when he was, before he came to Gauteng. He was one of our teachers. I studied there. He's not far from my home, by the way. So again, that's why I was saying that Landi Ako Yalandu, you are right. We're very close. Yeah, those people from that side are very close. We do imikiti together, everything. So, but that area, it's one of the areas that you can't just overlook.
Yes.
Yeah, Eastern Cape, Ngobo.
No, I see.
You can't just overlook. And now it's more developing. It's getting bigger and bigger. And the children are more getting educated. as of now, but before, as I was telling you, that our parents, most of us, our parents, even Mondli's parents, couldn't read and write. Almost all these people that I'm talking to you about, they have degrees now, their children have studied, they have degrees, because we didn't want to be like our parents. And our parents taught us that, I don't want you. My mother used to say to us, you must go to school, because I've never been to school. And I don't want anyone of my children that must go to school. So then we became better because of that. So we grew up being told that you must study, you must be independent if you're a woman, don't rely to a man. Even if you can get married, you must know that you are on your own.
Yes.
So those are the teachings that they used to teach us, our parents. So this is me then from that area.
And then when do you come to Gauteng?
I came to Gauteng after I've passed my matric, because my father was working at Rand Water Board, which is in Vereeniging. You call it Rand Water.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
So my father was working there. You can still find him in the books of Rand Water. He was one of the guys who were the laborers there. He was a security guard at the gate at that time. But before, when he started, he was one of those that are working in the dams, cleaning that water.
Okay.
The water at that time, we cleaned on ngekalika. But he was one neat person. I always tell people about that. He was very handsome and neat. I look like my father, by the way.
Okay.
So he used to, apparently, he used to carry the kalika in his head.
Yeah.
That 12.5, and then when he arrives, because he wear a white overall, then he'll start cleaning himself before he goes and take another packet and bring it. So the area where my father was working, I was there when I was 13 years old, because I was very close to my father. I was daddy's girl. So I wanted to come to Gauteng way back, but he never wanted me to come at that time because I was young. Because if I come, I was not going to be able to stay with him where he was staying. So then he didn't want me to come at that time. So I will come for holidays. Then he will ask one of those ladies. I think it was Stembo. But because at some stage now, my mother knew that I'm staying with Mom Paulina.
Yes.
And Mom Paulina end up having some children with my father, which they're still there. And some of them, I do communicate with them even now.
Yes.
So, but it was nice to come to Gauteng at that early, just for holidays.
Yes.
Then I'll go back home. Then when I passed then matric, I came this side. I studied at Vaal Secretarial College, which was linked to now TVET College, the VUT.
Yes.
Yeah, it was linked there at that time, but it was in town, the branch for administration.
Okay.
So I was studying there doing, I love administration. So I was studying typewriting, office work, because I wanted to be an office manager. That was my dream, to be an official and be an office manager. I dreamt of working at Potastau in Amtata. There was those offices.
Yes,
Gama Tanzima then. So I wanted to be like that. And I end up in Gauteng then. When I was working there, one of my cousin sisters, Machenene, and my brother, they were in the trade union.
Mm-hmm.
So they were working for the construction workers union. Then I will go out of school and then I will go there and do some practice with the typewriter. Then I end up working in the offices of the trade union. That's why I end up then working for the organization, which is the African National Congress. But at that time, it was still unbanned ANC.
Yes.
So I remember at some stage, they will come with the posters that says, or stickers that are written unbanned the ANC. And I will be scared of taking those stickers, because I know that this is jail if you are being seen with those stickers. But it was nice. And then I worked there. I end up moving from Vereeniging, because we're in Vereeniging, at 40 Merriman Street. I always remind people about it now when I go to Vereeniging, how that town was so beautiful.
It was a total disaster.
It was clean, speak and span. You will walk through 40 Merriman Street downtown, and then we'll buy curry. We'll go the other side of town. It was a beautiful town. We'll even go next to the Vaal River, that hotel that is there, next to the river there. It was a beautiful place to be, Vereeniging. I don't want to lie. It's a pity now. I always cry when I'm with the comrades, reminding them how that area used to be before and how it is now when the ANC is leading in government. So that's why I always say, not all is lost. We still need to bring back what that town was to the comrades from that area, because it was a beautiful place. I remember when we used to walk next to the offices now, the municipal offices, it was beautiful and green, especially on Sundays. And then we'll stand on the wall, we'll be watching there, and you want to get inside there so that you can just sit in that grass and those chairs. But now those things are no longer there. You
can see. Thanks to ANC. But anyway, just ignore.
I'll kill you.
But on Indaba ANC, in fact, I want to say, why did you then choose the ANC when you had other options? You could have joined AZAPO or PAC at the time.
I think because I was working at COSATU. Mm-hmm. So COSATU were told that it was an affiliate, of it was aligned to the ANC, as you know. So I wouldn't change then, because the only thing that I was told, as I'm telling you, that we're given those stickers and Ben the ANC will hide them, and then we'll be told that don't read this book, you must hide this book. But I was taken to school by the trade union to Moscow. So then that's when then I realized that now I'm the ANC person. So I went to Moscow to do some studies at a trade union school, which is an international school. Why? How did I go there? Before the unbanning, there was a call that all the administrators of COSATU must go and be trained to prepare them for unbanning.
Yes.
So I was part of that group, and I was the youngest that was taken to Zimbabwe in Harare, as they used to call it. So when I arrived in Harare, I was the youngest, and they asked me why I'm there. And I said, I'm young, but they asked me, those old men, Ntate Shope, Mama Mashope's husband, yes, yes. I met him. I met him, welcome, Jang, as he was young, you know, but he was working with them doing political education. Then I met Eric Mjali, Baba Mjali, all these old men, old Madalas, the ANC, who were in the struggle.
Yes, yes.
They were there running that course, a trade union, because those were the trade union leaders. So then they said to me, I must go to school. So I welcomed that call of going to school to Moscow. So they arranged immediately, but I came back to South Africa with that group of 30 administrators, but I was called back again then to go to school. That's when I was able to stay no mama shop, nabo tatuno khushe emizini yabo, because you will go and visit their families and then you will stay. So I stayed with mama for some weeks, then I went to Babno Khushe's house for some weeks before they take me to Moscow then to do my studies for 2 years, the diploma that I was doing. I nearly became a journalist, by the way, because when I was in Moscow, I developed this interest in communications and journalism. And when I came back, I remember I used to write for New Nation at that time, including Learn and Teach. So I would write articles about young women, how the empowerment of young women, how young women are in the struggle, and what is it that they should do. Yes. To be politically motivated. So then I developed interest at that time, because even when I went to school, so I knew that is the ANC that has made me to be at school in Moscow. And it was very interesting to work to be in an international trade union school with other countries, including those that come from Tanzania.
We hope that's all you are learning there, because Russia, you know, there are many things that you
learn. Teach you a lot of things indeed. Yeah. Part of those is intelligence. I nearly worked for intelligence because it was part of the package of the things that they will teach you.
Yes.
So you are right. I taught a lot of things. In fact, when I came back, I was supposed to work for intelligence, because I worked with Ntombi Adebe, who was the DDG at some stage at NIA, and she wanted me to go and join her. I didn't want to go and join her because I believe that I was still young and I was at the ANC at that time. I moved from trade union to the ANC, recruited by Sisnosiviwe Mapisangakul. She met me in Moscow, Sisnosiviwe, first time that we met. Then when I came back, because I was still trained by the trade union, we used to have summer schools that were organized by COSATU through VETS, and we'll stay at VETS for a week or 2 weeks doing those summer schools. Education at that time, it was one of the things that the ANC wanted us to do, especially political education. That's why even in the organization, I usually like to lead political education sessions, because of the interest that was developed in me and cultivated by the organization. Because everything that we used to do at that time, whoever comes in, that person used to be taught how the ANC is, and what is the ANC, what is COSATU, what is the relationship between these organizations.
Yes.
But the angle that at that time I was more interested, it was the one of the workers, because I was more on the workers' side as I was trained by the workers, and I went to trade union school. But in the trade union school, they will teach you even about the economics. That's why I love economics, because at that time it was world, they will say world economics. So you'll be getting, it's an international economics, yes, including international relations, all those things. But it was very nice, it was interesting. And the ANC, even here at home, when they came back, they were still having those teachings of focusing on political education for each and every individual that comes. And I think that's why now, when we are reconfiguring the organization, we are emphasizing the issue of the foundation course of the organization that must talk about the issues that will make you be enlightened and understand the importance of the ANC and why you need to learn more when you are in the ANC, including the principles of the organization. So those are the things that they used to do to us. So the foundation course, we think it will help us again to bring back that culture that of ANC. The organization. Yeah.
You mentioned Mama Umamnosivuye Mapisa-Nqakura, who is currently undergoing problems, legal problems, as it were. You know, when as a person who would be close to her, how do you feel? Or have you reached out to her? Of course, you guys are not allowed to attend courts because of ANC's renewal, blah, blah, blah. But, like, have you reached out to her and give her a crying shoulder to cry
yes,
on?
Yes, I did. I did. And I do communicate with Usisi. And she does communicate with me. I'm still a child,
yeah,
more than anything else. And it's a pity that she had to have this unfortunate situation that happened to her. Because yeah, she's one principled person. She's one strong woman. She's one person that have made some of us to be women as you see us. So I have a huge respect for Sisi. No matter what, I will never forget what she did to me. Because I've been developed by her, you know, Sis Maleka. Because after I've worked with her, I worked with Sis Maleka too. So, and I'm happy that they're very close, both of them, as family friends. Mm-hmm. They maintained that relationship that they had way back and still now they have. And I think at some stage, it's not where we'll be cleared from what people are saying. I believe that she will be cleared in everything that people are saying she had. That's why I don't think people, it will be fair for people to judge her,
yeah,
for whatever unfortunate situation that has happened to her.
Yeah. And then, Mklambe, we later pambili without going into other details, but I remember you resigned at some point and it was stated that you had a beef with then Premier, who's now the DSG of the ANC, Umamnomvula Mkonyane. What is your beef? What was your beef with her?
For me, it was not a beef per se, because I know that, I always say that sometimes people can be used to deal with whatever problem that you are having.
Yeah.
Because the incident happened in my house, the government car was lost, and the Tsotsis that killed Lucky Dube are the ones that came to my house and stole the car, because the car was sold to government and it was sold to another buyer who was a person that was coming from outside, as the owner of the garage was trying to explain. So, and I remember, because I told her everything what has happened. And I remember what she said to me. No, Sisi, don't worry. You know how she speaks most. Yeah. No, Sisi, don't worry. Imoto is ifunyanwa. And immediately, my third kucho, ngubengena I call, nyani imoto ifunyanwa. The car has crossed the border. It's in Mozambique. So in the end, I'm told, Sisi, imoto ifunyanwa, it crossed, it's in Mozambique. But they're following it up, Interpol are following it up. So she knew that the car is there. So I didn't understand why the part of resigning. Mm. And again, I even told them that if they believe that this car doesn't come back, can I be allowed to pay the car back?
Yeah.
Because I didn't steal the car.
Mm.
But unfortunately, all these things happened very fast. I was told to resign. So I didn't understand the reasons why I must resign if the car has been found. And I'm prepared even to pay if there's any expense that I might do, I must do in relation to that car. I remember even telling her that, can I even go and look for a second bond in my house so that I can pay the car of the state? And she didn't. So you know our reasons. So that's why I didn't have a much of a beef per se, because I just said, I'll just throw everything to God. I'm still young. I'll go back to the legislature, start afresh as a member, because I was offered even if I want to go to government, because they know that I'm more of an administrator. I said, no, I don't want to go to government. I've chosen politics. I want to go back to the legislature. And I went back to the legislature to be a backbencher. Already, remember, I was already at a senior level.
Maybe there's hope for Floyd, but anyway, no, just a passing.
Don't make an example with Floyd. Yeah. Floyd put himself in that mess.
No, maybe there's hope. I mean, if you're a big bencher.
I never had a beef with her. Even now, I don't have a beef with her. I do meet with her. We do discuss because I felt that, no, I can't carry other people's problems.
Yes.
So you resolved it.
I resolved it without
even discussing with her. But I know that she's the one that was even initiating that if I want to go outside and be an ambassador, she will definitely arrange for that for me. And I didn't want to leave politics. I wanted to be at home and be a politician. Hence, I'm still here now. And I don't regret what has happened to me because sometimes we learn lessons from our mistakes. Because now I know when you get the government car, make sure that your officials don't fight. Because I arrived in that department, my HOD and my CFO were fighting. So you can't have senior officials fighting amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. Because one of them trapped the other in that process. And I became the victim then at the end of the day. So, but I've accepted everything. But Yenusisi, azange ndamphatha ngenhliziyo. I'm kolela because I know.
So you guys get along now? Is that that's what I'm trying to get?
Yes,
at.
We do. We do because we're politicians. We work together. I can't have a problem with a person. It's worse if she's my leader. Yeah. And she has been my leader. And I respect her. I'm one person that is part of the generation that follows her. So yeah. I cannot have a problem with her. I cannot. You can't survive in politics if you carry beef or get irritated or angry with a person. There are no permanent friends and no permanent enemies. That's how we should be.
Let's just finish with ANC things before we get to the nub of issues that are happening at Department of Health. You were a deputy chairperson of this previous PEC when ANC lost Gauteng in the manner that it did, 34%. Maybe let me start this way. What is your analysis of why ANC lost here in Gauteng? What happened?
We lost because people didn't vote for us. Mm-hmm. And I think what we did as the organization, we thought we were in touch with the people, unaware that we are not in touch with the people. Mm. We detached ourselves gradually. And because people are angry at us, they are angry at us with some of the things that we are doing. One of those things is that it's us, when we are fighting, we end up going out to the newspapers. Mm. Talking about the organization, fighting amongst ourselves for petty things. Sometimes one of the things, if you were told to resign at some stage, you'll carry that and then start fighting in the newspaper, insulting each other. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that we've done as the organization. We forgot that there are people that we must take care of. Mm-hmm. We prioritized ourselves. So when people see us, they see these people that are detached from them. We stopped even going to funerals at some stage. Of going and visiting families, you know, when you're in the organization, you must live with the people.
Yes.
And our people are down there, are not at the level where we want to be, Tina. So we tend to forget that. That's another reason that made us to lose in Gauteng. So we're not in touch with the people. We're not taking them serious. I always say that we always take people for granted. You see, there's a pipe that have just burst in the street. Every day, you pass by there every day. You are a public representative. Mm. It doesn't need you, Ugutum Nandio councillor, to make sure that that pipe is closed. You must close that water because that water that is going down with sewer spillage, something like that, it needs us to clean that. Mm. People are dumping on not far from their yards because they say they don't have big dustbins. Mm. We are supposed to assist them to make sure that there are bigger dustbins that they carry their dead by Latele Konalap. But seeing as those and those, just a refuse collection, things that were supposed
basic
to do.
Things.
Basic things, and you didn't do. So we need to stick to those things that we're supposed to do. The lights are not working. The grass is not being cut. Those are the things that irritates people when they see us because they see these people who forgot where we come from. Yeah. So I think those are the basic things that have killed us as the organization. That's why now we need to go back to basics.
Well, you sound like someone who agrees with the reconfiguration. I mean, the way you reason, I think, because my question was going to be saying, then do you then agree with the decision that the organization embarked on to reconfigure?
Don't say this thing because people at some stage understand. They were saying I'm behind the reconfiguration. I was not, but I always tell it as it is.
Yes. No, I'm saying, do you think that was the best solution to... Well, it's a disbandment. Anyway, it's fine. Let's call it reconfiguration for progress. Reconfiguration, bringing in this provincial task team with the old members and new ones. and all these things that you guys are doing, of these courses and whatever you're doing. So do you believe this was the best solution?
I think now, before I didn't think that is the best solution, but now I think it was the best solution.
Okay.
Because there's a huge improvement in terms of how we communicate now as the organization. I'm sure you have seen recently all the events that we're organizing and we're doing as the ANC, that now we're more getting in touch to the people, and we have minimized the fights. Are you aware that we're no longer throwing each other's, throwing stones to each other in public
now?
Yeah,
better you must unite now.
And now we're united. It has forced us to work together as a collective.
Yeah.
In fact, if you speak as if we're in one of our meetings on Monday, when I was saying, I can see now the closeness of us without saying, let's work together and be close.
Mm.
We forget the petty things that we used to carry. You see, I live along because we have one mission now, to bring back the ANC. Bring
back the dignity of the ANC. Because if you don't, a lot of you guys, you lose.
We're going to lose.
Your crucial
we're all
jobs
going to be losers.
In fact,
even this reconfiguration has showed us that you will be the losers if you're not correcting each other.
Yes.
Because it's unlike we're not seeing some of us when we go astray. But we're scared of telling each other that we must stop this thing because this thing is going to cost us. Not everybody is happy with what our behavior. So I think now we're more careful now when we're doing things because we know that people are watching us and there will be just one call that says, these guys must just move out. They don't know what they want. Yeah.
And then, of course, we're in the midst of all this unity, but people are talking now. Mm-hmm. Obviously, because now this is an interim structure. The conversation is about what happens beyond this interim structure to elect a new PEC. And among the conversations that are happening, well, at least some of us who move in these ANC circles, I've heard your name personally, that there are people who are talking about you probably when that provincial conference comes, that you must stand for provincial chairperson. Have you heard such rumors yourself?
I've not heard them per se, but I'm sure maybe by a tete ikone na bakazi kumbazutho. But again, we'll wait for the branches of the ANC because there is a process that the ANC is going to do that can openly then discuss those things, which I will have an interest. Martini.
Yeah.
At the moment,
I'm
not interested.
I'm telling you because
all that I'm interested, I want the organization now to function.
Okay. No. I thought you'll answer that way, but it's fine. It's fine, Mama. Let's shift now to much more serious issues about what you do on a day-to-day basis as an MEC of health. Probably let's start it this way. What are the challenges in terms of your own analysis? What are the challenges, existing challenges right now? Or maybe what are the challenges that you found there when you arrived at health?
One of the issues that I picked up when I arrived, I did the access assessment by the way of the department because that's what you do when you arrive in a new department as a political head. My assessment was that my department was operating in silos.
Okay.
Each unit was doing its or her own thing. So they were not consolidated to be one.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find even the hospitals, each hospital will do his or her own thing with CEO work on. And I tried then to bring them together so that they must know that the center holds.
Mm-hmm.
The center was not holding. The center must hold. There is a
Imam now is
command and control.
Yeah.
Things are done this way. And I have my own way of doing things.
Yes.
But the advantage I gained for me is that I'm an administrator. So it's easy to pick it up that their HR is not there. I didn't have an HR there. I didn't have the legal. I didn't have the finance. Almost every unit was not there.
Yeah.
In terms of capacity, but in terms of performance. So you wouldn't get anything what you want.
Mm.
So then I had to start afresh, had my Lala Vuka. There's a meeting that they call it Lala Vuka because it started at 9 in the morning. Then we finished the following day at 3 o'clock. So in that meeting, it was the meeting that I wanted each and everyone to tell me what they are doing.
Mm.
It was easy. My meetings might end at 2. It's easy for me to run a meeting until 2 a.m. I don't have a problem. I'm not a morning person, so but I sleep late and then difficult for me to wake up in the morning.
Yes.
But I do wake up then because somebody assists me, even the kids, my children assist me to wake me up.
Yes.
But in that Lala Vuka, that's when I realized that I know this department and I'm ready to run the department.
Mm.
And people thought that Premier forced me to go to the department. I wanted to go to health.
Mm.
I asked him to send me to health.
Mm.
If you remember, there was this Alapalu that she's setting her up for failure, is the end of her political career. He didn't want me to go. He was worried about me, that I will fail like any other person that has been there. But I think I've managed the department, to run the department better than all those other MECs that were there. I think I had about 8 predecessors, but I don't think they were going to be able to do what I've done, because I've changed the department for the better. When I arrived, there was no money there. It was on the 22nd of October, 2022. Yes. Already the budget was finished. And when I asked, they were telling me that that's how it is here. Already when the money comes in March, the money is finished already because of the accruals. I'm still battling, by the way, to deal with the accruals, but I think I'm managing them properly now with the systems that I've put in place. So I made it a point that there are systems on the financial side. Yes. And it's part of the things, if you remember, Premier, that said, I must to stabilize the finances of the Department of Health.
In fact, I wanted to go there. The reason I'm on my phone, I want to go to the actual figures. But maybe, what is the financial standing of the department as it is now?
The financial standing of the department is that the department is healthy financially.
Okay.
Yeah, we do have money. The only thing that you can make a follow-up on and say, are you paying service providers on time? I do pay them on time, but I'm balancing that with the accruals that I have. And again, I'm balancing that with the verification process that I do, because there are other areas where you find that we have an invoice of more than 15 years back that is there in the system. And those invoices, we can't just pay them. We want to know, who are you, which work, where did you work, what is it that you did? Because definitely you will still remember what you have done in the department. And if we don't have any footprint of what you have done, definitely we can't pay you. But we negotiate to some of them that we owe them millions of money, so that we're able then to stagger those payments and pay that person. So we do pay them, but we have not reached the 30 days payment that the whole GPG targets us to assess us about. Yeah, yes. But we still do pay. But now we're putting up system. I think in this financial year, we'll be able to pay even within 30 days payment, everyone, because I'm putting up now the final systems after all these verifications that we're doing. Now we've set aside all these accruals, including the accruals that have been created by the SIU. Remember, the SIU is still digging some of those companies that were there. So we're separating those accruals so that they are not muddying the financials of the department. It's not easy, but we're trying our level best. But again, even in terms of the capacity, especially in the finance unit, we didn't have capacity. Most of the managers and chief directors that were there resigned during that process of PPEs. So then we had to employ new people that must come in the system. They come in the system, there are still those remnants of old people. Some of them will still have those things that they used to do before. It's not easy, but we are trying to clean the department in terms of the finances.
What is the budget of your department annually?
Now I'm sitting at 67 billion.
67 billion. Yeah, and most of it is spent on what?
Pardon?
Most of it is spent on what? I hope it's not salaries.
It's spent on compensation of employees and the other bigger one. Remember, we have 85,000 employees.
Yes.
Yes. So imagine then.
85,000
across the province.
Does that include nurses?
All of them are there. Doctors, nurses, porters, everybody, cleaners, wonkumuntu lab. And I'm not counting the contractors, contract workers, yeah. Because they're not part of that package, yeah. So it's a lot of people. That is why we did the Zivese campaign recently, just to make sure that we know who's in the system. And there are those that were in the system that we didn't know even they are there for months.
Is Kawelo also part of that?
She is part of that. We started with them, by the way. Okay. My office started, Nabokupulang. I said, we must start on the 14th floor.
Yeah.
So Zivese was done at us before we can even go to other institutions. All the hospitals, all the clinics in the province, because most of the clinics belong to me. And we're provincializing even the clinics now that are in the municipalities who are assisting them. So we have a huge department.
No, I see it's huge. And you see, I like that we're dealing with numbers now. So 85,000 employees against, what is the population of the province now? What, 18 million? What is the population of the Gauteng province?
We're 15 million. We're 16. We got us Balwe Rongo.
Okay.
We're 15 now.
So 85,000 employees dealing with 15 million people. Obviously, not everyone uses the public health care.
Yeah.
But 85%
is using public health care.
Yes. And
of
then,
the population.
And then I'm
and then only
14
that goes to private.
I'm getting somewhere. And then there's these other comrades of ours from all over the African continent, but most here.
Your brothers and sisters.
Yes.
And your wives and your aunts.
Yeah. From other African countries, foreign nationals, mm-hmm. to put it simply. And there's been complaints about the strain that they apparently put on the healthcare, especially in Gauteng, because most of them are here in Gauteng. And then on top of that, the population keeps on growing from all the other provinces, but that is fine. Those are South Africans. But these comrades from outside, what? By the way, how many foreign nationals are you able to identify that get assisted at primary healthcare
facilities? Quite a lot of them, quite a lot of them, especially in hospitals like your Imam Musa, your Petha Kowa, Jubilee Hospital, your Kalafong Hospital, Dr. George Mukari. I can just count a few, but you are talking about the ones that are across the borders. What about the provinces that I'm servicing?
No, but it's fine.
I'm not only servicing.
Those South Africans, they still pay tax in the country.
They are huge. I'm servicing almost all these provinces.
Okay.
Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest.
What do you mean you're servicing other provinces?
They come and get services here, especially on cancer.
Oh, yes. Also, you mean people who actually don't even reside here?
Yes.
Who reside in other provinces, they
come. If you can
here.
Go, I want to invite you to go to Steve Biko at 2 o'clock. Okay. We stand between Steve Biko and Pretoria District Hospital. You see, I've even opened some wards for people from Mpumalanga. Mm-hmm. At District Hospital, this other side. They come straight, it's about 200 people every day that visit their patients that are there. Because I've opened some wards trying to assist them. So we need, because there is no District Hospital, Academic Hospital in Mpumalanga, in Free State, in Northwest, in Limpopo, they are just building it now. They don't have it because it's still not operating. So all those people are coming to me, besides the other colleagues then that comes outside the country. And I'm servicing them because I always say to people, if that person died at the gate of that hospital, I must account.
Yeah, well, you must, MC. But what I'm trying to say...
And I'm trying to tell you the difficulty that I'm sitting at when you're pushing me to say I will do something.
Yeah.
The Human Rights Commission will be on top of me
100%,
if
I know.
I chase anyone.
So.
Not, yeah.
But I'm saying...
And okay. We are a journalist manager now. We are Ziv.
No, I'm listening. But you're trying to divert me. I don't care about people from Mpumalanga, Northwest.
Remember, why did you be a journalist?
Limpopo. So I am saying, when you are deflecting from the original question says, how much big a strain
it
do
is.
They put? And what are the numbers, by the
in
way?
In fact, because today sure in the caucus, we're discussing that even today, because the chief whip was raising that issue that the way that my department is struggling, there is so much that I'm carrying because of the strain of some of the colleagues that are coming from the neighboring countries that are here. Not only neighboring countries, even other countries. Because there are these people, Abana, we always talk about the ones.
Don't they have money, those ones for private
health? Yeah, no, but they don't have money for private health care. They come to me, those guys, but because of the color, we're not picking them.
Okay.
That's why I end up turning, because I know I was in Moscow. We used to go to the hospital. You know what the Russians used to do? If you are sick or you are HIV positive, you don't even go back to the university. You are taken to the bus, straight to the airport.
Back to your country.
Back to your country. And we're not doing it here.
That's
at home.
What I was coming.
But again, they give you the medication. You're being treated for now and you leave.
Hence my point exactly.
Not you should adopt that style.
100%.
Come, get medication now and leave. Don't come back again.
Yes.
But to us are the borders that are open that allows you to come back again.
Yeah, because you see, I don't have a problem with people who are in the country legally.
If I was in the ANC meeting, I would tell you my view about us and our borders.
Yes.
But because I'm in this,
maybe you can.
I want because I have my view that
but we
need to strengthen our borders. That's all.
Yes, but what I'm saying, besides that, because I think that is beyond you, that is a national policy issue of borders.
But it must start here.
Yes,
it must
but I'm
start
saying
here in the province.
At your level,
you must raise
at
it.
Your level now, because when you are dealing with this problem more than any other province of undocumented illegal, because let's also make it clear, we don't have a problem with people who are in the country legally, who have papers and all that, they have the equal rights with the citizens of the country. But there are these ones who seem to be in the majority who are here illegally. But then, I mean, for instance, I've heard stories of an illegal foreigner would have, it would be in bed, but a South African won't have space to be treated, which then it gets really, really untenable when it gets to that. What are you doing at that level? So, okay, let me put it this way. If there's an undocumented foreigner in bed here at Helen Joseph or whatever hospital here in Gauteng, and I come there bleeding, I got stabbed somewhere, and
you're
I need
drinking,
to be attended.
You got stabbed.
No. Okay, drinking or not, it doesn't matter. Even if I was drinking, but I'm a South African, are you able to remove
that? So you
them?
Demand your bed. No, I can't.
Why?
I can't, because it's against the human rights.
I know it's against, but you see, that is the
problem. I'm a human being too. Yes. I'm a human being, but remember, I'm an internationalist, man. I've studied international relations. I'm not like Mgwenya, I will put it that way. Mgwenya was saying, no, both as in understand, Lumuntu Magasukela. So, I mean, it's different. I'm a bit polished, I mean, how to end with that.
I understand.
But it's not right, but I must make sure, that's why then, I must make sure that I have enough capacity in my hospitals. I must have more beds, but it takes a strain in my budget.
And how inundated are our hospitals, by the way, because of those factors? I mean, let's factor in all factors now, foreign nationals, people from other provinces, as you are saying, who come for assistance, and the ever-growing population of Gauteng itself. I'm sure it's a like you are chasing a target that just keeps on moving.
Oh, yes, it's a moving target. But what we have been doing now is to make sure that at least we build extra wards, especially now the issues of mental health. We have so many mental health cases in our hospitals, and in every hospital we have extra wards now for mental health that we have built. We have renovated already. There are 30 bedded site is done at Bethakowa. We have that old Bethakowa hospital. We're doing 60 bedded now. That site, we're renovating it. It's beautiful. How I wish you can go and see it.
I will come when you build a new hospital. By the way, what are the plans in that regard?
I'm building Davidson. You are going to come then.
From scratch?
Yeah, from scratch, okay. In this quarter. That's my legacy, son, so I can't. But I'm Johan Haynes, I'm changing it to a hospital too. You remember it was a CHC. It was a hospital way back. Then we turned it to a CHC. Now we're taking it back to a hospital. So we're renovating that, but building extra wards that will be bigger now for the hospital. So that's a hospital. Bethakowa was old already. You can't say I didn't build.
No, you are. But I'm just saying, I mean, I'm always interested because, as I say, it's, well, in terms of the numbers themselves in Gauteng, it will keep on being a moving target.
So, and I'm going to build a tender.
Some of the interventions must include building from scratch new healthcare facilities.
Yes, no, we're doing that. We're putting bricks at Davidson.
Yes.
So before the end of this financial year, we'll see a hospital. And we're going to finish it on time, that one. Won't be like the clinics that we didn't finish.
Hopefully
there
won't be corruption, but anyway, it's fine.
You can't find corruption where I am.
Okay. Let's come to Tembisa Hospital now that I talk about corruption. In fact, I was told you were coming from there.
Yes, I'm coming from
Tembisa. And Tembisa Hospital has been in the media for all sorts of reasons. Well, maybe let's start with the arson
situation.
It was
in the media for all sorts of
reasons. Let's start with the latest, the arson situation. What was happening there? Who burnt that place? What is going on there?
It was a gentleman that we don't know what was his problem, but the gentleman is in jail as we speak.
So, but I'm saying, what are the preliminary investigations revealing about
that? They have not
the...
yet given us the report.
Okay.
But the guy, they said it's singing like a bird, but... So we're still waiting, but who sent? He must go there.
Yes.
Because he banned first and then he banned for the second time.
Yes.
So that's
which made it all interesting to some of us, because given what Tembisa Hospital had been in the news for corruption, and then there was
ANC. And there's stability.
There
now
was ANC comrades' names were being banded about.
There's stability now.
Okay, ma'am. I want to first lay out what were the problems, so that whenever you can tell us the solutions you have brought to the table. So I'm saying, first of all, there were issues of corruption that included Tembisa Hospital. Lots of names were bandied about, including ANC comrades and so on and so forth. And now the arson, which is done twice, which would appear like someone is burning evidence or something to that effect. But starting from the corruption up to now, what interventions have you put in place in the Tembisa Hospital specific case?
We've tightened controls, especially on the financial side, because you remember there are so many things that they were doing wrong in the finance.
Yeah.
So at least there are controls now. And then we've tightened the management. There is a CEO now, the late Dr. Lowe, who was active, was working at Sizwe Hospital. Mm-hmm. We've taken her to Tembisa in terms of managing that area. And quite, I think we're beefing up their staff. We've employed HOUs, mm-hmm. head of units, so that they can teach. Because remember, Tembisa is a tertiary institution. We've got quite a number of young doctors who are students who are teaching, who are being taught at Tembisa. And I think we're doing fine.
Yeah.
There's more stability.
And other hospitals, let's just talk about hospitals generally. What is the situation in the rest of the other tertiary hospitals?
We have 37 hospitals, 4 academic hospitals.
Okay.
In Gauteng, it's 4, and then we have 3 tertiary.
Mm-hmm.
So we have we call it the Big 7 after that, and then we have district hospitals, and we have the district and the regional hospitals. But there is a huge improvement in almost every hospital,
mm-hmm.
in terms of management of those hospitals and in terms of controls, which were not there. Remember, I told you even the leakage, especially in terms of finances. But the only problem that now we have is the capacity, especially the nurses. We have a shortage of nurses, but we are busy now trying to employ then more nurses after the call from the minister that he will give us again another 200. Whilst even on our side, we'll definitely add some capacity. We have doctors that we have employed. We no longer have a problem of doctors that are unemployed, especially those that are bursary holders,
okay.
in the province. And those that, it's our bursary holders, it's other doctors that were unemployed during COVID-19, that were employed during COVID-19, we brought them back in the system. Same as nurses, we brought them back in the system that were working during COVID-19. You remember, even those, some were on contract, but now we're employing them permanent in the hospitals. That's where we have a problem. We're strengthening Chikon. Chikon, it's Gauteng Training College for nurses.
Okay.
So now we are training some nurses, because most of the nurses are senior nurses. So they are retired.
They are already on their way out.
The system,
yeah.
And then we're bringing the new cohort, and we're training those young ones now that are coming back, that are coming in the system. And those are the critical things that I have a problem with. The maintenance of the hospitals, remember, we're the agency that has been doing our maintenance, but now we have an agreement that we will share the cost together, the maintenance. The critical things like fixing of globes and other things will be done by the department, because we've strengthened the department of infrastructure in the department. Remember, at some stage it was not there, and then there were people that were involved in the Anglo-Ashanti story, and then some there to resign and leave the system. So, but now we have our own system now, our own internal controls in the infrastructure unit, doing our own things. So, which I think we're doing better now in terms of the improvements on maintenance of our hospitals. Because everybody, you remember, they used to complain that bathrooms are not working, this is not working. I remember the first question that I had with the SAFM, it was the issue of bathrooms that are not working. I said, how? And then I said, never again.
Yes.
So that's why the issue of maintenance for every institution.
And how is Krisani Baragwanath as the most famous of all our hospitals? Yes.
The biggest hospital in the African continent.
Mm. What is the situation there? Because also itself, it has not covered itself in glory in the past.
Things are fine. We have the new CEO now, a young girl. I think she's 36 years, going for 37 years old now. When we employed her, she was 35.
I hope she's not a cater of the youth league. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a young person.
Okay.
All that I can say, she's a young person.
Okay.
But she's a young person, comes from Tsakane.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll see her, she's very energetic. She has changed the institution for the better. I think now it's a construction site. I call it Krisani Baragwanath, it's a construction site. But remember, again, we have centers of excellence at Krisani. If you go there, you will see that's one of the best institutions, best machines, best institutions. If you just go to and see what they are doing, you go there to critical care, you will survive. Even if they think that you are dying, you will be alive. And you, same as Charlotte Maxeke, by the way, same as Steve Biko, Dr. George Mukari, it's moving, it's getting there too. In fact, the 3 institutions, Dr. George, Steve, and Krisani Baragwanath, they have these 3 CEOs that are young, I'm happy that at least I've given young people an opportunity. I think now you'll say thumb up to the MEC.
No, I give you thumbs up for that. Maybe
there's a huge
the one you are building, you can appoint me as the CEO there.
Man. I can't just grab a person on the street. I can't take a journalist and
you never know.
So which means tomorrow that my title hope blank and means the CEO.
No problem. Okay, I hear you, Mama. It looks like there's positive things happening with hospitals. Clinics, though, where everything starts, really, which is where people go on a day-to-day, issues that they have, health issues. What is the state of our clinics?
We have the clinics that are managed by the municipalities.
Okay.
We have the clinics that are managed by the provincial government.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have realized is the Department of Health, any clinic, people think that is the Department of Health responsibility, which they are not wrong.
Yeah.
They are correct. So now we end up even using some of, we do assist municipalities with a certain subsidy to run the clinics. Mm-hmm. But I've realized that if there is no electricity in a clinic in the middle of Soweto, people phone me and say, MEC, there is no electricity. Then I have to quickly make a plan. Then if there's no diesel in the generator, I might have to make a plan. We end up now running even those clinics as if it's the provincial government.
Which you should, if the municipalities are failing. I mean, Joburg is a case in point.
And I'm not complaining. I'm doing that. In fact, you are provincializing now the clinics so that we can take the responsibility back to the provincial government. Clear. Because if I don't do that, those clinics are going to collapse.
100%.
If there is no medication, we use our own medication and give it. Because you can't have a clinic that doesn't have bandage, elastoplasters, all these simple things.
All they have is panad, it was food.
Yeah, so we give them. But what we have done now, I've started in Johannesburg. We're employing doctors now to clinics.
Yes.
Besides the sessional doctors, remember when you go, they will tell you that the doctor is going to come on Tuesday and Thursday. There is no doctor today. So now we have doctors that we have employed in the clinics, and we're gradually employing. I'll do that in the whole province to employ those doctors. We're buying some of the equipment, like your x-ray, so that you don't go to the hospital just for the x-ray machine. Go to the clinic, you get the x-ray, they are able to check what is your problem. But we have mobile clinics that we have in the whole province.
Yes.
I'm sure you have seen me distributing mobile clinics in the province.
And how are they assisting in the broader scheme of things?
They go to areas where you can't go, in the hostels, in the informal settlements, in the outskirts of Gauteng. So we have those mobile clinics that are going around with nurses and some with doctors. And it's helping, it's easing up the pressure, because I have a program that I love so much, which is my pet project, local health promotion programs. I go to every community. I have a program called Corner to Corner. I go to the township and close the four streets and then start checking each and every person, every household in those streets. Who is here? Who stays here? Who's sick? Who's not sick? How many kids? Who's the child that is sick? What are they taking? Then you immunize even the young children. Remember, some of the parents are lazy to take their children to the clinics. So we immunize them right on the spot. We go directly to the hostels and do the same thing of corner to corner. And we have another program called Ziveze, so that you must come and show yourself in that community. So we call everyone to come. So it's nicer. It started in Johannesburg, even that one of the people called Sizakuwe. We go to you.
Yes.
And then we give you medication. But we have another program that is nice, that don't go to the clinic if you know that you are diabetic. You fill in the form, we call it Tablap. And then once you have that form, we send you an SMS. You come and take your medication. You package it for 3 months. Now we've signed a contract for 6 months. We package it so that you can come and take your medication for 6 months. Nobody sees you that you're in the clinic, because you colleagues, especially men, are scared of being seen sitting in the queue in the clinic to take medication of diabetic, HIV and AIDS, all other funny diseases that you will find. People are always scared. They have stigma so that people don't want to be seen. So we make sure that now we do that. Send you an SMS. You go there. There are locals that you'll find in some of the clinics. Open that local with your number, pin code, and then you open and then you take your medication off to go.
You're restoring some dignity.
Yes, some dignity. Mm. But after 3 months, then you must come back and be checked by the doctor. Then you can be in the clinic for some time. But it's interesting and it's good, because it eases up the pressure even in our clinics. Because remember, there is a problem of queues in our clinics. Yes. But again, your mothers, and your fathers, they wake up so early in the morning to go to the clinic at 4 a.m. You find them standing in
the Yeah, but again, they know that they the say service in public service but is very slow.
They are endangering themselves again. But what we are doing now, we have said the security guards must open for them so that we have a place at the reception area where they must sit until the nurses arrive. Then they can sort them out then according to their areas. Yes. Because we find them standing in the queue outside so early in the morning.
It's cold.
As if it's 1994 line for voting. For and election. I get so frustrated when they say, I have been here at MEC and it's cold at that time. Mm. So those are the things that we're trying to mitigate, the queue management. But again, we're installing queue management in our hospitals and in our clinics. Besides that one, we're installing cameras. There is a node that we've built at Barra that is going to link all the hospitals so that you can see whatever you want in every hospital. Just go to Barra when you have time and tell them that MEC said, open that place where there are cameras for me.
Also, you are able now from Barra to see all
I'm linking that. I've not linked it already, but I've built the system already.
Okay.
But at Barra, you can see the whole Barra standing there, but it's going to be linked to all the hospitals and be able to see it. That's called e-health boot. So anyway, the technology is here now.
Hey, you are moving, Mama. but Mama, will you end up in a clinic and the duplication of responsibilities being proven some under municipalities at a police level? How do you align these? As you say, most people run to you when you actually don't run these clinics. So I'm saying, at a police level, as a provincial government, are you guys doing anything to align police to make sure either municipalities take full control or the province takes full control?
No, we're taking full control now. We're provincializing the clinics and we have the meetings, monthly meetings with the MMCs of health in the regions so that they can report to me what are the problems they're experiencing, including the one on ambulances. I'm decentralizing the ambulances. I'm sure you've seen some of them now parked somewhere in a fire station. So we're talking to municipalities to put them in those areas so that when they need an ambulance, at least the movement, it's shorter for them, the colleagues, for them to go and pick up the patients. But again, it does take time and go to our center at Midrand. We have a beautiful center of excellence that we have built there that is linking our ambulances with us and the communities. If they go to Deep Slot to take a patient, they have cameras to themselves because they've been marked quite a number of times, being beaten up, some of them. Now they have cameras. They will tell you that I can see them in the center when they're getting inside the home. That we just press the number plate of the car, and then it shows you who are the colleagues that are the two colleagues that are getting into that household, picking up the patient, checking the patient, and take the patient back to the hospital.